This is The Checkpoint, supported by Adidas Terrex. And we are Black Trail Runners. Black Trail Runners is a community and campaigning charity seeking to improve inclusion, participation, and representation of Black people in trail running. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Strava by searching Black Trail Runners, on Twitter at Runners Black, or via our website, blacktrailrunners.run. And you can even sign up for our trail race event, Black to the Trails, at blacktothetrails.co.uk. If something in this episode resonates with you, why not share it with us online or leave a review on the streaming platform you use, as it helps our podcast to grow. Thank you for downloading this episode. Now, let's head to the conversation. So, this is the Black Trail Runners Checkpoint. My name is Sabrina, better known as Sab. And this is a bit of a special one. So with me at the moment, I have two very, very important people. We're waiting for a third, but he hasn't yet joined the conversation. We're hoping that he'll come. So I am joined today by Renee McGregor, member of Black Trail Runners and third place female at the Spine Sprint 2022. Yay! And Raj Mahaputra. Have I pronounced that correctly, Raj?
Completely wrong. Completely wrong.
Correct me now, because this is what you've been doing with me for the past week.
So it's Raj Mahaputra.
Raj Mahaputra, who That's is a right. gentleman who I met, thank the Lord, while I was taking part in the spine race last week. What I am going to do, for those of you who have no idea, and there will be many of you listening that have no idea what the spine race is, I want my two friends, for their respective distances, to give a little, just a little introduction as to what it is their race was. So, Renee, tell me about the Spine Sprint. What was it? How long was it? Can you remember the ascent? And when did you start it?
Okay, so the Spine Sprint is the baby race of what you guys did, or as they say on the website, the entry level race, because I'm not as brave as you two. But it's 46 miles, starts from Edale and goes along the Pennine Way until Hebden Bridge. The ascent was, I think it was like 2,070 metres from my watch is what it said. And we started at midday on Saturday, the 18th of June. And we had 18 hours to complete the mission, if I call it that. So, yeah. And, you know, my biggest fear was running in the dark, which I did have to do. But anyway, more on that later.
And had you done anything like A, that distance before, or B, had you done anything on the Pennine Way before? Because it's traversing the Pennine Way, or the first part of the Pennine Way, your race, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I've never done anything on the Pennine Way before. I have done, you know, I do ultra distances, but for the last 10 years, the maximum I've done is 50K. So it was a little bit more of a stretch than normal. I think it'd be more like 71K. But obviously, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I've never done that distance before. I've done it once before, but a very long time ago. Like back in 2012, I did it. So, yeah, it was new to me. I think the biggest challenge, though, probably like you guys, Fatim, and yours was much bigger challenges. But for me, the biggest challenge was carrying all the kit and the self-supportive aspect of it and the self-navigation. I've never done a self-navigation race before because I generally choose not to because my navigation skills are so bad. And I normally just follow Ewan, but I was not allowed to follow Ewan because he wasn't allowed to help me or support me in any way. That was what was quite frightening, was the sort of self-supported aspect of it. But yeah, I survived.
I want to go deeper into that in a minute. But next, I want Raj, because Raj, as I found out, having spent a good 4.5 days with him last week, is a bit of a veteran of the summer spine. So I want to find out from you, Raj, tell those people that have no idea what the full summer spine is. What is it?
It's I really like Rini's description of the baby event, because, you know, the full summer spine is 268 miles, which is in kilometers, if you like thinking kilometers, is about 430 kilometers. And there are about 45,000 feet of climb, which is just under 15,000 meters of climb along the way. And, you know, for those people who think in European terms, this is climb, not climb and descent, ascent and descent. This is just ascent only. It's 15,000 meters of climb ascent. It's a race that started at 8 a.m. on Sunday morning. So the day after Rini's race started, we started. And we have 6.5 days to complete the distance, which sounds, you know, when you think about your time, Rini, to do your race in, it sounds like a very, very generous time allowance. But actually what's interesting is as time goes on, you just get slower, and your feet get, you know, more battered, and everything about the whole process wears on you, and the weather gets to you. The best thing about the spine is the full spine is that you can't predict the weather over a week, especially on the terrain you're covering and the distance you're traveling over. And whereas you can do over a short distance, you can say over the next 24 hours it looks like this. You can't do that over a full distance spine race. And so the way we describe that event is that you get 268 miles, 45,000 feet of climb, and all the weather.
All the weather. Now, Rini, I know the various conversations. We were training together earlier this year. We did a run together earlier this year, and we were having a conversation, and we were talking about goal races and accountability in our training. And you hadn't had anything particularly in the diary. And I remember the conversation we had where I was like, well, I'm doing the spine. You should come and do the spine. And because you're just a woman just like after my own heart, you decided that actually, yeah, that might be a good idea, but you wouldn't do the full spine. You would do the spine sprint. Now, I know that it was a race that, as you said, because of the element of night running, the self-nav, that it was a bit scary for you, wasn't it? So talk to me about that kind of period before you actually stood on that start line and we kind of waved you off. What thoughts were going through your head about how you were going to handle this race and tackle it kind of mentally and physically?
So I think, you know, generally speaking, when I go into a race, I kind of never really doubt that I'll finish it. Like, I'm always like, you know, I'm going to finish this. Whatever happens, I'll dig deep. I've done hard things. I can do this. But as you know, it's like, what, 3 or 4 weeks beforehand, we had entered a race in Brecon, mainly as a training run. And it was a 20-mile training run. And I felt really up for that, as in when I signed up for the race, I was like, 20 miles in the Brecons, love that. My kind of race, my sort of terrain, no problem. But as you know, I had to DNF because I was pretty poorly en route and subsequently was quite unwell for about a week afterwards. And although I knew I was unwell and that was the reason why I had to stop, for some reason that had really knocked my confidence. So going into the spine sprint, especially knowing that it was going to be a hard day out, I was really panicking that I wasn't as resilient as I thought I was. And so for me, that was my big fear. And I guess maybe I didn't express that as much. I spoke to Ewan about it and he kept saying to me, but you were really unwell. Like, I know how unwell you were and you knew how unwell I was. And I just, but for me, it was like, there was that seed of doubt Like, if it gets hard, am I going to stop? If I'm hurting, am I going to stop? You know, that was my worry. And also because we didn't know about any like water and whether there'd be enough water and whether we'd get any water along the way. And, you know, I know it's a slightly off topic, but I have to tell you my classic fail with my flask, my filter flask. You know, I read all the instructions, yeah. Did it, what are you supposed to do? What did I do? I put the nozzle in the water.
Oh, no.
I was trying to get the water, I was like, you absolute idiot. Absolute idiot. Can't drink that water now, can you, Rini? So, yeah, it was, obviously I still need work on self-supporting, but yeah, so I guess that was my concern is I was worried about my own strength, which, but I suppose going in, like, you know, having you at the start was really, really great. It really helped just us chit-chatting for an hour or so beforehand really made a difference to me. I knew I was prepared, like, you know, Damien is my coach as well, and I knew we'd done the work, so I was holding on to that. Obviously, nutritionally, I had a plan and I was going to execute it. So that also wasn't a concern. So I think for myself, I was like, you've controlled everything you can control, and you just got to go out there and remember to enjoy it. And, you know, what I had done was break it down, because obviously there's no checkpoints, there's no aid stations in this race. So for me, it was like, okay, I'd broken it down. I knew where all the road crossings were. And that was how I was just like one road crossing to the next road crossing to the next road crossing to the next road crossing. And that was how I broke my race up. And every time I got to a road crossing, I was like, I'm doing all right. I feel okay. Okay, let's go. And I think that was kind of how I got through it. And I kept expecting to kind of feel rubbish and want to stop, but that didn't happen. And I think also in the back of my mind, it was things like knowing I had your support, knowing that you were about to start something even more ridiculous in the next 12 hours. Also, you know, there's some really cool stuff going on generally in the running world at the moment. Like, you know, Rat Race, Abby, who's doing Rat Race, is running from Land's End to John O'Groats. And we'd had a bit of a conversation the night before, and I was just like, do you know what? If she can get up every day and do between 30 and 35 miles for 5 weeks, I can run 46 miles in one day. I can do this, you know? And I think it was just that. It was that kind of using all the support I've got and have and all the amazing people in my life that believe in me and just going, I can do this.
I think it's really interesting, Rini, because, you know, I joke about the fact this is it's the baby spine. But actually, when you joke about that, you're taking away from actually what it is, which is actually 46 miles should never be considered as easy.
Yeah.
You know, and what we do and what you're talking about is rationalizing it so that you can make it easier for you to comprehend, for you to take the first steps out onto, for you to start moving, and then to be able to rationalize it in steps along the way. So it's yes, I'm doing fine. Yes, I'm doing fine. No, I'm not doing fine. But I can work on that one, I can work on that one, and I'll be fine anyway. And it's that whole process of how you rationalize what actually, if you stop and think about it for 1 minute, actually is quite insane. The idea that I'm going to cover 46 miles on foot over quite difficult terrain, you know, having, and in your case, you know, having come into it with a disappointing previous race. Actually, these are all things which, you know, we should never take away the challenge that these things are. And it's very easy for, you know, someone like myself to go into a race and just say, you know, I've done this before. But actually, you should never consider doing it before as a qualification for that you'll do it again.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think that's really key. And I think, like, you know, I always say, you know, to people who say, oh my God, how do you even contemplate even, like, you know, running a marathon and running an ultra? And I'm like, you know, it's all relative, you know, it's all relative, because, you know, with this podcast, I know that people will be listening to it that will never, ever want to run 46 miles or 268. But, you know, I know that in 2009, you know, that was me. I couldn't even fathom running a mile. And even running a mile for 40 minutes was just so incredibly hard. And I had a lot of the same feelings running that mile as 5 stone overweight, you know, 12 weeks after I had my first baby. The same fear and thoughts in my head as I had during the week last week. So, you know, whether you're running these distances or whether you're new to it, there's still that fear, isn't there, around what you've said, Rini, like navigation, where am I going to go? What if I get lost? You know, what if I get caught out and I have to run when it's dusk or dark? You know, from what you've said, Raj, you know, just because we've done distances close to the distances that we did over the last week before, that is no guarantee that we're going to be able to do it again. And Raj, actually, that brings me really nicely onto your prep for the race, because, you know, you tell the listeners, so you did the first ever summer spine, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I did the first ever summer spine. That was 5 years ago. And then I completed that successfully. And it was in spine terms, we describe each one by the weather we encounter on the way. So the first one was the one which we had all the storms. Yeah. You know, all the storms hit us on that first one. And then the second year we had El Scorchio, which was the hot one. We had daytime temperatures of well over 30 degrees in the shade, and nighttime temperatures of 20 degrees. Then the next year after that, we had the temperate one, actually. It was absolutely fine. It was lovely. and then we had the COVID one that got cancelled, obviously. Yeah. But the first three I did were absolutely fine. And my training regime for the first three was quite simple. I used to go to London every week pre-COVID, and I'd work out of London 4 days a week. And I would run to work in the morning, and I'd run between 10 and 15K in the morning. And then I'd run home at the end of the day. And I have a standing desk, so I'd stand up all day as well between the two things. So it was run to work, run home from work, and stand all day. The first 3 years of doing the spine race, I would never say they were easy, but the challenges were very different, because the challenge wasn't being on my feet and covering the distance. The challenge was the weather, the feeding myself, managing your body in a clever way, because you've never done 268 miles in one go. Or, you know, you don't train by doing 268 miles in one go. You know, that's not what you do. And then COVID happened, and I moved to a different way of working, and I now work from home. And so I do not do the big commutes. I do not have to run anywhere. Last year, I had a series of deaths in the family and in my friend circle that basically knocked my training completely out the window. And I arrived at the start line last year having done no training whatsoever, thinking that experience will carry me through. And experience carried me through about 20 miles, and then determination carried me through a further 50-ish. Mm-hmm. So I got to Malham Tarn last year, which is... you'll know all about that, Fab. but I got to Malham Tarn last year, and I knew that I should go no further last year. And I stopped. And having stopped, it took me 2 weeks to walk again at that point. That's how determined I was to carry on. Mm. That when I stopped, within 10 minutes, I could do no more. And it took me 3 months to run again, because I was that badly injured. This year, I managed to do a lot more training for about 6 months, from September last year when I started running again through till March this year. And then March this year, I had another series of deaths and losses within the friend circle, which knocked my training completely out the window. And I arrived at the start line this year hoping that the combination of the little exercise I had done plus the training I had done plus the experience I had before would carry me through. And actually, that combined with the knowledge that I would have to slow down, I would really have to slow things right down in order to complete and not be silly like I've done in the past and try to go and break speeds and go faster and faster. And this time, go slower. That ability to rationalize what I needed to do in the moment that I go along. And I guess that's where experience comes in. You learn to read what your body is telling you. And you realize very quickly, no, this is too fast. Everyone else around me is going faster than I want to go, and slowing it down. So I guess my training was just not where I wanted it to be at all. But then, I mean, I can see your faces, but I mean, you put your hands up. I always say yes if you think that you did all the training you wanted to do. I mean, whoever does all the training they want to do. And the answer is, I can't think of anyone who's done all the training they want to do. There'll always be something you missed because life happened in some shape or form. And when you're doing these big races, life always gets in the way of the kind of things you want to do.
And so
it's being able to rationalize that and say, okay, this is difficult. How am I going to do this? And in the moment, being able to, have your, we talked about this a lot, didn't we, Sab, about having a plan.
Yeah.
And then being willing to tear that plan up and go with another plan.
Absolutely. And another plan and another reset. And let's have another reset. That brings me really, really nicely onto, because I want to take up our story, Raj, from Malam Tan. And Rini, as we're kind of into talking about the race, what I'd like to kind of talk about with you is, was there a point within your race where you felt, you know what, I'm feeling good? And that at any point, did you know what position you were in? Did that even matter? I know that you broke it down to like road crossings and seeing you in and everything like that, but what was your kind of race strategy and how well do you feel that that was executed?
obviously, Raj is right in the sense that experience does help. And, as you know, Sabrina, Damien likes to send his runners this ouchy email that he sends out like 24 hours before you go and race. And I always remember the thing he says in that is that the people that do well are the ones that maintain a consistent speed. And where my race obviously is very different to yours is that it was something I knew that if I wanted to do well, I would need to run, not hike fundamentally. That wasn't the intention. I will hand on heart say I never, you were there at the start. I just wanted to finish and that was it. So when I started, I was quite conservative with my pace. So I was like, it's a long day out, Rini. You're going to be out here for a few hours. Let's just take it easy. But what I know about my strength is I'm really good on that terrain. Like I'm really good. I'm a good climber. I'm a very good descender. Specifically when people are not that experienced. So I kind of knew I had that. And I love descending as well, particularly when the ground is dry. So I didn't have a strategy apart from I just wanted to feel within myself most of the time. And I think when I got to halfway, I knew I was in a good place because people kept shouting at me saying, you're doing really well, you're doing really well. And I was like, okay, cool. And I'd seen Ewan a couple of times and he sort of said, I think you're about second or third lady. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. It's all going to go wrong anyway. Like I'm only halfway. I really wasn't worried. I was just glad that the bloody pack was staying on my back and not, I hadn't fallen over on it. So that was good. And I guess, interestingly, so Jude was the lady that came second. She was really struggling up to the second, the halfway point. And I was like, come on, run with me. Like, we've got this. And just got her to follow me fundamentally. Yeah. I wish I hadn't done that now because I might have come second. But, in the competitive spirit. And we got to the second. And the thing is, she's local. So once she got to the second half of the race, she knew it. She knew what I had no idea what lay ahead of me because I'd not recce'd the second half of the race. But yeah, it was good. I mean, you know, I ate really well. I drank when I could. I think it was when we got to the White Horse pub,
yes,
which was the last road crossing for us before we finished. At that point, I'd overtaken quite a few of the challenger people, and they were like, you're third, you're doing great, keep going. And I saw Ewan at the White Horse, and he said, you're doing really, really well, you've got 8 miles to go and smash it. And at that point, I knew that Fourth Lady was not far behind me, but I also thought, I've come this far, I am not going to lose it now. So at this point, my strategy was that when I knew I needed to put my foot down, I had asked my daughter, Ella, to create a playlist for me. And at this point, I put the playlist on. Oh my God, it was amazing. I had no idea it was on this playlist, by the way. And it was, you know, it was that bit around the reservoir. It's quite flat.
Yeah.
And I just went. And I felt like I was just like, I am just having a great time. The tunes were banging. I was like, I am absolutely, this is like 30 odd miles in. I'm like, I am loving this.
I love it.
And we got to, and then I saw, and people kept saying, well, you know, you've got the big climb to Studley Pike. And in my head, I was like, that's not a big climb for me.
Yeah.
I know what a big climb is.
Yeah.
And I shot up there, overtook quite a few of the guys that had overtaken me in the first half of the race. And I knew then I had it, because my descending on those technical terrains is really good. And I knew that the Fourth Lady really struggled with the descending. So I just knew I had it at that point. I was like, right, I'm doing this. But like I said, when I then got to the bottom of Studley Pike, I was a bit confused because it's a bit tricky at that point.
But
it's a bit difficult to work out where you're at. And then going into the woods, I was like, right, okay, I'm going to turn the playlist off, because I don't like being in the woods in the dark on my own. So I'm just going to get through here as quickly as possible. So I guess I did know by that point that I was in a really good place. I couldn't get my head around it, could not believe it.
Yeah.
When I crossed the line, I was like, I have finished now, haven't I? And they're like, you have finished and you are Third Lady and, you know, you're ninth overall. And I was like, what? You know, completely and utterly, can't really explain it. I still can't quite believe it, if I'm honest. I have to keep pinching myself.
But there's so many takeaways from what you said there, Rini, that people can really apply to their own training for whatever distance they're doing. And what that is that, you know, I mean, you're British trail running champion. Let's just like put that out there right now. But you know, what I love about you, you know so clearly what your strengths are. You know, you're talking about descending on technical terrain. You know that you can smash that. And that's why when we did that race in the Brecon Beacons a couple of weeks ago, and I was gaining on you on the ups, I knew that you weren't well. I knew that there was probably going to be a point where you were going to have to say, you know what, today's not my day. Because I know, as your friend and having watched you and having seen you, what your strengths are. But I think there's something really, really powerful for us all to take away in what you said, in the fact that what you said about the ascent to Studley Pike, like, people were saying it's a big ascent. Now I know what big ascents are. And for me, that's not. So, and with that comes the confidence as well, that when people are saying to you, actually, you know what, this descent's really technical, or that ascent is really, you know, you've got to really dig deep, and you're thinking, well, actually, I know that for me, that is totally manageable. I just think that gives you wings. And it seems as though that's what it did for you. It gave you wings, because you were like, nah, and you've got your music on and you're loving life, you know? And I think that for us all within our training journeys, to really understand our areas of strength in order to really capitalize upon them in whatever distance we're doing is a really, really important thing to continue to understand and continue to work on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, like, lots of people, and I'll probably do a post on this separately, but lots of people have been asking about, you know, did your nutrition strategy work and all these kind of things? And I was like, yeah, it did. But I also knew what I needed when I needed it, you know, that which also really helped. I had a couple of moments where I knew I was a bit salt depleted, but I could act on that straight away because I know what that feels like. And again, that comes with experience, as you both know. So I think with nutrition, talking about what you were saying earlier, you guys saying about having a plan and then ripping it up and starting again. I mean, that's the strategy we used going into major games, like when we went to Rio, when we went to London. That was exactly the same strategy we used with our teams that I was working with. And it's the same strategy I use now, is always have a contingency. So yes, you've got your foods and things and your drinks that you know you like, but have a backup just in case, just in case. Mm-hmm. It's so important to be able to deviate from the plan and start again if you need to.
I think what's really interesting for me is that it's the fundamental difference between trail races and ultra races to flat road races. Mm. In a flat road race, because it's flat, you are racing the other people around you. When you're doing ultra and trail, because of the varying terrain, because of the length of the distance you're traveling over, you are racing the course. And if you're racing the course, you have to race your own race, because you know that over the distance, you know your strengths and weaknesses, you play to those instead. If you race someone up a hill and your skill is not racing up a hill, you destroy yourself going up a hill. Whereas the other person, you never know. They may be brilliant going up a hill and you're trying to keep up with them, but they may be terrible going on the flat, and you've just wasted an opportunity there. So I think, your idea when you talk about not really caring about where you were in the race is actually a really strong indication of the fact that you knew what you were doing.
Absolutely. And I think that really brings me on really nicely to Malham Tarn. Malham Tarn, where the year before Raj has decided, you know what, I'm going to call it here. Which I know from conversations with him and the checkpoint manager, John Bamber, that like when Raj says, that's it. He's thought about this a great deal. And when I got to Malham Tarn, I had been on my own for, around about 70 miles and had been suffering on that day with mild heat stroke. So had been continuously vomiting throughout the day, not able to keep in water, not able to keep in food. Really hitting wall after wall after wall. And within that, knowing that I was only, as they say, in relative distance, 70 miles in, I was at Malham Tarn. And I walked into that checkpoint really feeling this could be it. This could be the end for me. What I have learnt over the course of since the 19th, is that the spine family, the volunteers, the medics, do not let you give up on your dream very easily at all. And there was an amazing man and amazing medics at that checkpoint that gave me options. A man called John Bamber being one of those amazing people who sat me down. I was seen by a medic. I was given Dioralyte. I was given soup. I was given a special strawberry drink from John's toolkit. And, I was given options for how can we get you to the next checkpoint, which was Hawes. Different options. And then at the corner of my eye, I heard, "Hi, Sab." And it was Raj who sat down next to me. And long story short, one of the options I was given was that John had said, look, what we can try and do is we can try and find someone that's kind of your pace, that, because I was very, very worried in my state and in, I was feeling quite faint of going up to Fountains Fell and down and then ascending Penygent and then down. So I kind of did want to be in company if I was going to go on. And Raj was asked whether he might like to escort me to Horse. And thank the Lord, he said yes. He was like, yep, I'll see her to Horse. I don't think he knew what he was getting into at that point. If he could probably look back, he may have thought twice. But for me, we'd spoke before then. The checkpoints, but that was where the Sab and Raj kind of journey on the Pennine Way kind of began. So explain to me a bit about when you got to Malham Tarn, Raj. Was that kind of like a eureka moment for you, the fact that you got there and you were like, you know what, things feel different than they did last year. And then you're having to kind of like look around and see this woman who kind of might need a bit of a chaperone over Ben again.
Well, I'm actually going to go back a couple of years before that, because on the El Scorcio year, the second year, I arrived in Malham Tarn, massively dehydrated, very ill, feeling very faint, but knowing that I had it in me to carry on. And so I carried on and then called ahead to say, look, if there are any medics available to see me at the next road crossing, I need some advice. And they were met me at the next road crossing and they pulled me together again, much the same way as John did with you. But they just basically fed me water and a lot of it. And then it got me going again. So I knew that the place that you were in, kind of slightly. I also knew the year before how bad I was and how long it took me to get to that checkpoint and the state I was in there. And even though I was going slower this year than I'd done in previous years, I got to Malham Tarn faster than I'd got to in previous years. And that's an interesting one of these chat things about ultras, is you go slower and yet you cover the distance faster.
Yeah.
How does that even work? Yeah. And so I realized I had so much time in the bag that actually, you know, that I was feeling great about it, actually. Yes. I was feeling really genuinely great about where I was. Yeah. And then, yes, John said, you know, Raj, what do you think? And I thought, yeah, hell, why not? You know, this is what ultra distance events are all about. It's about team. It's about camaraderie. It's about, you know, it's to your point, Rini, it's about, you know, there's a person ahead of you who's struggling a bit. How do I help that person?
Yeah.
It does not matter where they are in the field. You help each other because you're on the side of a mountain, you know? Yeah. And actually, if you don't help each other, people get into trouble in these situations. It's a bit of a no-brainer, actually. And I have to say that, you know, within about, I think, 10 minutes of leaving our checkpoint, that mini checkpoint, I knew that we were going to have a fun time chatting to each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing when you meet someone and kind of like the conversation just kind of flows and gets deep pretty quickly. And I think both of us being people of color, there was a lot of kind of common ground. There was a lot of conversation. You know, you'd heard of Black Trail Runners, and I can remember your face light up actually as we were ascending Fountains Fell, and you were like, kind of, you know, what do you do? And I was like, oh, you know, kind of just, you know, co-founded this charity called Black Trail Runners. You were like, oh my god, I heard your radio interview on Radio 4, and it was just like I kind of knew then. I was like, this could be a really great experience, because I'm not going to say I was preaching to the converted, because it wasn't, but the conversations that we were able to have around race, around representation, around access, and those conversations just flowing all of the way at various points through our journey together. Because I think at that point that the you know, when we got together at Malham Tarn, you know, your job, as it were, or what you had said, was to get me to halls, like, you know, and we know at some points within that journey I'd said, leave me, Raj, just leave me to Bivvy. And no, you were like, nope, I'm getting you to halls. And I don't think we knew at that point that actually we were gonna kind of carry on together. But I think that when we got to the next checkpoint, we got into halls and we slept for a bit, and then we kind of almost like woke up at the same time and were kind of almost ready to go at the same time. I think just naturally we fell into this, oh, are we doing this? Are we going to do this? And, you know, and then we started to get into our like little reset breaks and, you know, strategizing in terms of, should we push on here? Should we trot? Are we going to fast hike? Are we going to have a gastro break? You know, because our spine race did turn into a bit of
a culinary tour
of the Pennine Way, which I absolutely loved. And it was something that was just so beautiful in terms of going forward as we traversed northwards and those hitting the wall got more and more frequent, and sleep deprivation and hallucinations and everything that goes with it started to come into play more and more. I think that I really thought I'd do this race solo. That was the thing. You know, I'll do it solo. I'm going to nav on my own. I'm not going to be held up by anyone. I'm not going to hold anyone up. That was like my A goal. It was like, I'm going to do this. This is like, and that's really just from my experience coming from a place of, I just do a lot of my training solo. I do a lot of these things solo. And I never really fully understood the power of actually experiencing someone like something like this with another runner who is trying to achieve the same thing. And that thing being to complete this in style, as we said, you know, to complete it in style and strong, you know. And that was an amazing experience for me. But I know, Raj, that you, and I don't know whether you'd said about helping the fourth place woman, Rini, but Raj, I know that in the past that you have kind of buddied up for parts of the race with people in previous editions.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the key thing is, you know, I would say I was a solo runner on these events normally, but solo doesn't mean you run solo all the time. Solo means that your agenda is, I'm going to get to the finish line as quick as I can. That's what solo means to me. And sometimes that requires a partnership for a period. And other times it means, actually, you know what? Right now I'm moving a bit faster than you, so I'll probably catch you at the next checkpoint. You know, and actually the next checkpoint comes and goes and you realize that you're in and out faster than the other person is. And then you realize in this event, I realized very quickly that actually I wasn't interested in running solo. Actually, I was interested in working as a pair to get to the finish line in a specific way. And whether that was based on our conversations about representation and about Black Trail runners and about all the other drivers that put us on the fell together, or whether it was because actually, you know what, this year, more than any previous year, I needed someone, because last year was such a, you know, disaster of a run. Actually, I kind of needed the reset year, effectively. And the reset year meant that company along the way just made sense to me this time around. And I have to say, you know, it's just a real, for me, it was an eye-opener, because I have never felt the need to have someone running alongside me. And I have to say, even this year, I didn't feel the need to have someone alongside me, but I really appreciated your presence.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same. Yeah, because someone said to me yesterday, someone said, would you have been able to, had you not met Raj, or had you been on your own, would you have completed it? And I said, hindsight is a great thing. Absolutely. You know, my mental resilience, that I would have kept stepping on. I would have probably just kept stepping on until I had either been timed out or I had completed it. But for me this year, I appreciated, I was grateful that we had met, from Malham Tarn, we had done that bit together. And then that there was this unwritten kind of contract between us that we're doing this. Like, and you kept saying, like, we're doing this, Sab. Like, yeah, we're doing this. And the experience for me is my very first spine. The way that we did it was absolutely, it was like the A goal, because everything about it was great. You know, when I felt weak, when I felt, I don't know how I'm going to do this. You know, you're ahead and you're like, you know, this is what the nav is. This is what we've got coming next. And that was important, as you know, for me, because I kind of like to get an idea in my head as to kind of what's around the corner. And then there was a period, you know, where I supported you, where you were really struggling with sleep deprivation too. And like, then I saw it as like, this is what I'm going to do for our team. I am going to try and stay compos mentis. I'm going to make sure he doesn't go over on his ankle. And together we both played our part in that team. And we met up with other people, But and we asked them if they wanted to join our team. But ultimately, it was you and I right to the bitter end. And where Rini, it was really funny, Rini, when you were saying about, you know, going up Stodley Pike and you just knowing that you kind of had it and going downhill. Where Raj and I had that moment in the race was, we got to hut one, and we had on the Cheviot, and we got to hut one and we had a little rest there. And then I can remember hearing in my head one of the safety team saying, someone asking, how long does it take to get to hut two? And I heard in my head 5 hours, Raj. I don't know whether I was hallucinating, but someone has said, oh, around about 5 hours. And I can remember thinking in my head, no. Like we are going to do it quicker than 5 hours. And we did, actually. We did, because we got to Windy Gale. And yeah. And we got an absolute stonk on. We were trotting. We were fast hiking to the point where we got to hut two, and I can remember saying to Raj, who was totally in agreement because he could get his trot on whenever, I was like, we're not stopping at hut two. Like, we're not stopping. We're going for it. And we got our little kind of competitive spirit on then, because although we just wanted to complete, we also were at the stage where, like, we want to complete in style. We want to complete strong. And I knew that we had that in us. I knew that with running within ourselves, or with doing the Pennine way, doing the spine within ourselves and taking those resets and having fish and chips in Dufton, which we did before we climbed up to Crossvale, which was, anyone that doesn't do that in the spine, you're just missing out, because it was amazing. And that was Raj's thing. He was like, we are having fish and chips before, in the pub in Dufton, before we climb up to Crossvale. And it fueled us so well, getting up that climb. I cannot think of any part of the journey that I wasn't grateful to have you in my presence and navigating that trail with me. I don't want to burst into tears right now, but it was beautiful. And it leads me on to actually kind of, you know, really when you crossed the line and you realized that you were like third lady, what did that feel like?
Just unreal.
Did you think, I wish I would have done 268 miles?
No, I have no desire to do what you guys have done. Not even now, I have no desire to do that. But I don't know. For me, I mean, I've run a lot of races and I've done lots of different types of terrain. But that one meant something. I don't know if it's because I was doing it for Black Trail Runners or whether it's because I was so scared at the start of the race. And that was a genuine fear, or whether it's because I was doing it for charity, you know, a charity that means a lot to me. I don't know, but even it was the fact that I was the only, not just woman, but the only person of color doing my race. There was nobody else on that trail that looked like me. And I don't know, it meant a lot. I think that podium finish, although I'm not one to really worry about that kind of thing, it meant a lot. And I think, you know, I finished and I saw Ewan's face and he was so proud to sort of got to go, that's my girlfriend. She's just smashed this race. And I think we talked about like realistic goals and I said, it'll probably take me about 12 hours. And he'd always said to me, I reckon it'll take you less than that, but, you know, and I was like, no, I reckon 12 hours. So, you know, I finished in 10 hours, 46, and I was just, I was just blown away by it all. But also just the fact that I felt okay. I was very emotional crossing the line, probably like you guys, really emotional. And it was weird crossing the line at, you know, quarter to 11. I was like, okay, I think I might need to go to bed soon. But it was great. And they, you know, they're so brilliant. As you said, the spine family are so amazing. They usher you in. They're like, what do you need? What? I was like, I just need a cup of tea. I really need a cup of tea. And they made me a really amazing cup of tea. And, you know, I had a bit of food and then got changed, etc. And then we drove off. But yeah, it was It was unreal. But what was more unreal was when I got told, yeah, you're third lady, but you're ninth overall. And I was like, I was like, wow, like that doesn't often happen. And especially then Chris King messaged me that night. And he was like, respect, Rini, you absolutely smashed it. But not only that, you did it in the year where they had 47% females that entered the Spine Sprint. So the biggest year that they'd had a female representation. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to take that. I'm not very good at owning my wins often, but I am really proud of this one. And I feel proud to have represented Black Trail Runners, as I said in the video for the spine as well. It meant a lot to me to be wearing that t-shirt and doing it for you, Sab. It really meant a lot.
I was so proud. I mean, that did interrupt my sleep that night because I was just so keen to see you kind of get in. And yeah, it was just everything. I knew that you would do well. I just had such belief in your ability, and yeah, to be out there representing, you know, Black Trail Runners, representing for females, representing it all is just absolute, just so beautiful. And Raj, when we came into Kirkyetholm and we were kind of climbing up that last hill, and I said, right, you know, it's time for you to go. What was going through, because your charity, who you're chair of, NAS, I want you to tell us a little bit more about that kind of as we wrap up the interview. But what were the feelings that were going through your mind, Raj, having kind of, you know, gone through another spine, knowing that you were going to complete, kind of coming down to Kirkyetholm and seeing your wife and son, you knew they were there waiting for you. What was going through your head? What was your kind of reflections on that?
Coming up that hill, it felt really strange, actually. It felt strange because you and I had done the previous 4.5 days, you know, together.
Yeah.
And it felt very strange to be going, all right, then I'm leaving you here.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That was weird. And I thought, no, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, we had a good conversation about why it was the right thing to do. Yeah. And yeah, you know, it was the right call. Was the right call, but it was a weird one to make. I also have a tradition, as you know, of doing these video, Facebook Live videos. Yeah. Along the
which
way.
I love, and I've been waiting for them. I've been waiting for them all week.
No, they're there. They're all on the thing.
Are they there? So, I need to find them.
You're just going to find me and just look them up. They're all public, so you can see them. But as I was coming in, I have a thing that I always, that after the first year where I was told, a chap came alongside me, a chap called Richard Lendon, who's kind of famous in spine circles. He walked up the hill alongside me and then walked down the hill alongside me as I was going full speed and he was walking alongside me. And he made a big point to say, Raj thinks he's going very, very fast, but actually he's barely moving. And he just walked alongside me. And I made it a deal that ever since then, when I finish with a sprint.
Yeah.
I literally go into a full tilt sprint and I try to out sprint the camera person.
Yeah.
And this time Ryan was on his motorized skateboard, which basically meant to go full speed sprint faster than him was quite difficult. But I did try my best and I went straight through the finish line and hit that wall quite hard. And it was great fun. I mean, for me, that moment of crossing the line and just saying, thank goodness, I am here and I'm here for all the right reasons. And, you know, and I've made it here because despite the training and despite the lack of training and despite the rubbishness that the last 2.5 years has served up to me, I'm here at the finish line of this. And, you know, I reflected on, people have said to me, would you have made it to the finish line had you not messed Sab? And that's a really interesting question for me because it's so hard to judge that. But what I do know, Sab, is that I would have gone faster had I not met you. But faster doesn't necessarily mean you get to the finish line. And I'm pretty certain that faster in this case, this year, would have been a bad thing. because the weather was so hot, the conditions in the foot were so hard. There were so many things that meant faster would have been bad. And I think I would have gone faster. So would that mean I would have got to the line faster? I don't know. But I do reflect on it thinking, thank goodness I made it to that finish line, because yeah. I don't know what I would do otherwise.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, that's all I think from very early on. I think from Malham Tarn, really, my goal was complete. And it wasn't about, it was about competing with myself. It was about keeping going. It was about, you know, it was about bringing myself out with your help, with the help of the medics and with my own mental resilience out of these depths of darkness that had me crying 5 minutes from a checkpoint saying, I'm confused. I don't know where to go. I don't know who I am. And yeah, very much. It was a strange, actually, when you went off, which we'd agreed and we discussed why we were doing that near the end. And it was like, oh, he's gone. He's kind of not my Raj anymore. He's kind of out there. He's gone. And it was, yeah, it was for me this feeling of I'm actually going to do this. Like for so many miles, I had in the darkness, you know, thought, how the hell am I going to put another mile in these feet that are absolutely just crippling me and this pain unlike I've ever felt before? And to know that realization that even if I had to crawl there, I was going to cross the finish line was just, it's still overwhelming. It's still, I look at my medal and the certificate and I'm like, oh my God. And, you know, people have said, you know, you're in this very really special spine finishers tribe now, that, you know, people who are much fitter than you have tried and haven't succeeded. People who are, you know, it's takes a special kind of person. And although I think the post-ultra blues are coming, they're on their way. I have the memories, I have the videos, I have the photos, I have the medals. And what I really want to do for all of us to kind of wrap up, because we need to wrap up, is just kind of like, if there was anything that you could give people listening to this that you've learned throughout this year's spine journey, what would it be? A takeaway.
My favorite quote of the whole journey, Sab, from you, was when you were sat down in a little slump and you said, this was meant to be a hobby. Why am I here? How did this happen? And I think that actually is a really interesting learning point. It's actually, you know, be careful what you choose as your hobbies, because, you know, who knows where they might take you. No, seriously, though, for me, the biggest learning point this year was actually, you know, there are so many different ways of doing these journeys, and you just need to be open to the possibility that is presented before you at all times, and don't think you know the answer all the time. You know, you need to play with those thoughts and play with the opportunities in front of you and just work it out. Don't assume anything.
Absolutely. I think Rini's frozen, but she's just WhatsApped me to say that her take home is, we can do hard things, which is a bit of a motto of Black Trail Runners. It's a bit of a thing that we say, that we can, no matter what, we can find it in ourselves to do hard things. And I think with her third place, I think she really showed that this year. And I guess, yeah, sorry, Raj, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say that actually the thing that I think that's really important here is that one of representation, and it's about being seen. And I have never really contemplated that properly before. Rini, I've been in many races over the last 10 years where I've been the only brown face in a race. And actually, on this occasion, I was one of a few people in it. But actually, I reflected on why I race at all. And I've realized that I had permission to be on the fells and on the trails, not because of my color, and because I saw someone else of color on the fells, but because I saw someone with arthritis on the trails. And that gave me permission to be on the trails. And actually, I think that sometimes we all need different permissions to be out there. And your accomplishment this time round of coming third, but also being the only person of colour in your race and coming ninth overall, people should look at that and really take on board that, you know, if they ever wanted, if they're ever looking for a sign to say you belong here, you know, that's a sign. And Sab, you know, we talked about this an awful lot about why we're on the fells as well. And I look at the two of us pairing up in the way we did, and look at Suki, who, you know, sadly we've missed this evening, but Suki and him being on the fells as well. You know, if ever there was a sign of we belong here, you belong here too, it's watching the way in which I think that all of us, you know, I'm very proud of how we conducted ourselves over the course of the race. And I think that we finished strongly. I don't even know where we finished, Sab.
Nor do
no
I.
Idea.
It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter.
No, but actually finishing strongly was the important thing for me. Yeah. And being able to be seen as a person of colour on the side of FL, I mean, that to me is a super important thing.
That's it. For me, it was, you know, we've had this conversation so many times, Sabrina, growing up and not seeing people like ourselves in the things that we want to do and almost being held back because of that. And you can't do that. Why do you think you can do that? Like, you know, for me, I want people to know there's nothing wrong with us. There's nothing different about us. You know, I used to believe that my physiology must be wrong, which is why I don't see runners running of my, you know, of my colour. Maybe I'm just not built to be a runner, whatever it might be. There's nothing wrong with us. You know, we are exactly the same. We just maybe haven't had as many opportunities as, you know, as our white peers fundamentally. And we don't often get pushed into sport as our white peers. And I think for me, yeah, I didn't set out to do as well as I did, but it means a lot. And I hope that I have given people permission to go out and do hard things, but to go out and believe that they can do it and they belong there 100%. I think, you know, Raj said it brilliantly.
And I think that you've both basically said it so brilliantly. And I feel even more inspired just having this last hour of conversation with you. You know, my takeaway is that representation really does matter. And I think as four people, Zuki couldn't be here tonight, but he couldn't get onto the podcast platform because his laptop had crashed. But each of us doing our thing as a team and as separately is such a strong message to anyone listening to this, especially people of colour who have any kind of goal or are inspired to maybe even look at a trail race, whether it's a 268 mile, a 46 mile or a 5 mile, whatever it might be. Like what we've said here, like we belong here too. And I see our presence in the spine this year as the start. Just the start, because I already know in the messages that I've received that people are looking at it. People of colour are looking at it. They're thinking, what does it training look like to get me to the sprint next year? What does that mean? What do you mean by the spine? All of these questions that people are, their interest is piqued. And that's what we need. It's to pique the interest. It's to show that we belong here too. It's to show that we can do hard things. And it's to show all of those people out there that representation matters. It matters. And us being out there doing it showed how much it mattered. So thank you so much for being here tonight. I wish Zuki could have been here, but hey, maybe he wants his own podcast. Who knows? But no, he sent apologies that he couldn't be here. And just to round off, you know, Black Trail Runners is a charity that seeks to diversify trail running and bring more people of colour, more Black and brown people to the sport of trail running. Raj, tell me a bit about NAS. Tell me a bit about the charity that you are chairman of.
So I chair a charity called the National Axial Spondyloarthritis Society. And axial spondyloarthritis is an inflammatory arthritis that typically you get first symptoms of in your early 20s, if not late teens. It is a chronic condition. It means you get it for the rest of your life. And it's basically treated. You treat the condition. The delay to diagnosis for this condition is about 8.5 years. So after first symptoms, it takes 8.5 years to get to a point where you are, where you get a diagnosis which enables you to access treatment. In that period of time, untold damage can happen. And so one of the things that I do through all the running I do and the awareness raising I try to bring to the condition is to try to highlight that if you have back pain for longer than 3 months, that is in your lower back, if you have pain in your butt, literally, and it rotates and it goes from either side, one buttock to the other buttock, you know, if you have pain that is bad in your back in the morning, but in the course of the next hour or so improves as you start moving, these are all symptoms potentially of an inflammatory arthritis, which with care and support, you can overcome very quickly, manage very quickly and easily. I have seen people with this condition do the spine race, not just me, but others too. Jerry Dance was another one this year, and Richard Beard, who competed this year, didn't finish. He'd finished in previous years, also had the condition. But we also had people doing the sprint race, doing the challenger this year as well. But I've got people all around the world who are doing these mad races despite this condition, because exercise is one of the best ways of managing it. And so we're big ambassadors for the idea of exercise managing a condition which is chronic and painful. But also we want people, if they feel like they've got symptoms, and if you look at nas.co.uk, which is nass.co.uk, and look at the symptom checker there, you can find out whether or not, if you've got back pain, whether or not that's something worth checking out with a GP a bit further. It's definitely worth getting treatment for these things.
Thank you so much. So that's, please do visit the website. We'll put links to the website in the show notes as well as links to Raj's social media and Rini's social media, and any other elements that they want to promote, or, well, you want to promote yourselves, basically, and how awesome you are. But thank you so, so much. I'm not going to take up any more of your time. And I just want to say how grateful I am to call you friends and to know you and to have traveled on this amazing spine journey with you. Who knows where it will take us in the future?
But, well, I was going to say, Sab, I noticed that you said my first spine earlier on. So I'm just going to call you on that at some point to say you said my first, and I've now finished four, okay? And it started with I've finished my first.
Yeah, it's so your influence just,
I look forward to seeing you there next year.
Oh my God, it's your influence. I certainly know that I'm going to be volunteering maybe at the winter, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's funny how quickly we forget the dark times and all we remember is the light and the joy. I guess that's why this hobby is addictive, Raj. It's addictive. But thank you so much. And yes, I'm sure we will speak again in the future on the Checkpoint. There are many different topics I think that we can cover, but have a good evening both. Thank you for joining us at the Checkpoint.
If you've enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe and share online.
Also, please remember to leave your review on the podcast platform that you selected, as it really helps our podcast to grow.
Your support helps make this podcast possible.
Remember, if you have any questions, get in touch with us via our Instagram page at Black Trail Runners, or if you want to join our community, please search Facebook for Black Trail Runners and connect with us.